This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
By the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, writes George W. Bush in an executive order issued July 17th, just a couple of days ago. Welcome to our program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. By the authority vested in me as president, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the National Emergencies Act, and Section 301 title of Title 3 of the U.S. Code, I, George W. Bush, President of the United States, find that due to the unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States posed by acts of violence threatening the peace and stability of Iraq. Now, isn't this weird? Here he is declaring a state of emergency based on Iraq and undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq and to provide humanitarian assistance to the Iraqi people. It is in the interests of the United States to take additional steps with respect to the national emergency declared in Executive Order 13303 on May 22, 2003, and expanded in Executive Order 13315 of August 28, 2003, and relied upon for additional steps taken in Executive Order 13350 of July 29, 2004, and Executive Order 13364 of November 29, 2004. I hereby order, except to the extent provided in sections blah de blah or in regulations blah de blah, all property and interests in property of the following persons who are in the United States or who hereinafter come within the United States or that are hereinafter come within the possession or control of United States persons are blocked and may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. And then there's a colon. So this is, they're talking about the assets, the property and interests of any of the people who qualify under the rest of the sentence. And the rest of the sentence says, any person determined by the Secretary of State, any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense to have committed or pose a risk, a significant risk of committing an act or acts of violence that have the purpose or effect of threatening the peace or stability of Iraq, undermining efforts to promote economic reconstruction and political reform in Iraq, to have material assisted, sponsored, or provided financial, material, logistical, or technical support for, blah-de-blah, to be owned, controlled by, blah-de-blah. The prohibitions in this subsection shall include but not limited to the making of any contribution or provision of funds, goods, or services by, to, or for the benefit of persons whose property, et cetera, et cetera. And even adds, any conspiracy formed to violate any of the prohibitions set forth in this order is prohibited. In other words, if you and I have a conversation about opposing Bush's policies in Iraq, George W. Bush can now claim that we are conspirators, and under this executive order issued on the 17th of July, 2007, just several days ago, George W. Bush can have you and I have all of our assets frozen, our credit cards frozen, our bank accounts taken, our homes seized, our cars seized, and we are immediately rendered non-persons in the United States, homeless persons in the United States, and what? Well, there's a lot of people pushing back on this, not just this particular executive order, but just this whole idea that the President of the United States has powers that even King George III didn't claim. One of them is Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts is an economist, nationally syndicated columnist. He served as the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration, earning fame as the father of Reaganomics. We've got to have a conversation about that sometime. He's the former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and Scripps Howard News Service, and was a former contributing editor to William F. Buckley's publication, The National Review. Writing over at counterpunch.org, he has a new piece out that I wanted to talk with him about. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Or I should say, welcome back. It seems we talk about once a year and have for the last 3 or 4 years. Good to have you with us. You are, as a conservative. Last time we talked, you were a Republican. First of all, do you still both wear those labels?
I don't think I'll ever vote for another Republican, no.
Okay. You are in your column a couple of days ago. You said, and I quote from the first sentence, and I'd like to use this just as the stepping off point to find out your thoughts on all this stuff. You say, unless Congress immediately impeaches Bush and Cheney, a year from now, the U.S. could be a dictatorial police state at war with Iran. Those are very, very strong words, sir, coming from a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration.
Well, I don't actually think they're very strong. I get a lot of flack that they're understated and the situation is worse than I say. Consider, for example, the executive order you were reading from before we started talking. You realize, of course, that when Bush exercises this authority, which I don't believe he has, there's no check to it. It doesn't have to be ratified by Congress. The people who bear the brunt of these dictatorial police state actions have no recourse to the judiciary. So it really is a form of just total one-man absolute rule. Now, most Americans will say, well, I don't have anything to fear. I'm not doing anything wrong. If that's the case, Tom, why did the founders write the Constitution of the United States? Did they write it only for people who were doing things wrong and had things to fear? So the American people don't really understand the danger that they face. And they also don't understand, Tom, that by any normal political calculation, as the Los Angeles Times pointed out yesterday in the article, Bush the Albatross, where Ronald Brownstein just reminded everyone of conventional political information, which is that, to quote him, unpopular presidents have consistently undercut their party in the next election. 88% of voters who disapproved of the retiring president's job performance voted against his party's nominee in past elections. On average, 80%. Of voters who disapproved of a president's performance, they voted against his party's candidates, even in House races. Now, the article goes on to point out that given Bush's dismal approval record, rating where he stands, it's a total wipeout for Republicans in 2008. And numerous pundits have used these well-known political facts in support of the conclusion that this is the reason the Democrats have not brought a halt to Bush's follies or the war, because they expect his unpopular policies to provide them with a landslide victory in next year's election. So everyone, if you look at conventional wisdom, Bush makes no sense. Cheney makes no sense. Now, the problem's reasoning is it assumes that Cheney and Rove and the Republicans are ignorant of these facts, or it assumes that they are content for the Republican Party to be destroyed after Bush has his fling.
And you consider neither of those to be, you know, reality.
Those are not reality. So what this tells anybody who's paying attention, that it's much more likely that Cheney and Roe have in mind events that will once again rally the people behind President Bush and behind the Republican Party that is fighting the war on terror that the Democrats want to lose. So that's what we're headed for. I mean, you and your listeners don't believe that the Republican Party has decided just to self-destruct so Bush could have his ego fling. I mean, or that Cheney could act like a fool for 8 years. Is something's in the works. And when it happens, whether it's authentic or whether it's orchestrated and staged, all of those executive orders are implemented. They're implemented just like that. And they go far beyond the ones that you quoted. They essentially create a dictatorial police state in which Congress and the judiciary have no roles.
And these executive, I'd like to talk with you about these executive orders and how they come about and what kind of power they have and what can be done about them. Can you stick around right after the break and we'll continue this conversation? Because we do have to take a commercial break here. Great. Thank you. We're talking with Paul Craig Roberts. His newest piece over at counterpunch.org, an economist, nationally syndicated columnist, former assistant secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration, known as the father of Reaganomics, former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal. We're talking with Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts, an economist, nationally syndicated columnist, former assistant secretary of Treasury in the Reagan administration, former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and the National Review. Paul Craig Roberts, yesterday we talked with Bruce Fein, and he was arguing that impeachment against Bush and Cheney must proceed immediately in order to rescue the Constitution, in as much as the executive branch has taken on powers to itself that were never envisioned by the founders, and in fact even exceed the powers that Julius Caesar and King George III took to themselves. That is, the power to reach into any nation in the world and seize people and torture them, imprison them, whatever, without habeas corpus. You're making a slightly different argument. You're suggesting that the Republicans, and this is a little bit more of a political calculation, that the Republicans are not stupid, that they realize that they're going to go down in flames in 2008, and so something terrible is going to happen between now and then to stop that from happening. Do I have that right?
That's what they keep telling us. Michael Chertoff, the so-called Homeland Security Director. Now, notice, too, Tom, Homeland, that's a Nazi term. When Americans ever call this the homeland? I mean, this is a brand new thing they've created, you see.
Well, in fact, just but, apropos of that, if I may, this is just a 20-second clip. Hitler and Hess studied the Zionist movement when they were writing Mein Kampf, when Hitler was in jail, when he was in prison. And the Zionist movement at the time, you know, was arguing for a homeland for the Jews. And they thought, we need to capture that word and create this notion of blood and soil for the German people. And so Rudolf Hess, in 1934 at the Nuremberg rallies, first introduced the word homeland, Heimat is the word, into the German vocabulary. Prior to that, it had always been Vaterland, you know, fatherland.
Right.
And here is Rudolf Hess introducing Adolf Hitler in 1934 at the Nuremberg rallies. This is from Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will movie. It's just a very short clip. Notice the word Heimat, and then he says, for all of the Deutsche, alles die Deutsche in der ganze Welt, all of the Germans in the entire world.
Dank ihrer Führung,
thanks to our Führer,
wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen. Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein. A homeland. Here we have.
Heimat zu sein. Für alle Deutschen der Welt.
And then he introduces Hitler, and Hitler gets up and speaks and starts using the word homeland for the very first time. And I don't remember the word homeland ever being used in the context of the United States before now.
No, it's a brand new Bush regime invention. And all that cheering that we were hearing from the Hitler rally, if you've ever attended one of the Bush speeches where the crowd is programmed and they start screaming, USA, 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 it's sort of eerie. It's sort of eerily similar. Now, to get back to your question, first of all, Bruce Fein is completely correct. I totally agree with him. Second, yes, I take one more step. I point out that administration figures themselves and prominent Republican propagandists, including and also the recent intelligence report, National Intelligence Estimate, are preparing us for another 9/11 event or series of events. Chertoff has predicted them. Rick Santorum, the former Republican senator, said recently that that all this anti-war attitude of the American public would soon disappear after the next series of attacks that we were going to experience. And, of course, the National Intelligence Estimate is saying that Al-Qaeda has regrouped, is strong again, and is sending operatives here to the U.S. to blow us up again. So you have to count on the fact that if Al-Qaeda is not going to do it, it's going to be orchestrated, because there's no other way to pull the Republican Party's bacon out of the fire. Just the other day, one of the libertarian sites, Lou Rockwell, had this fellow, Grieg, pointing out that the Republicans are praying for another 9/11. It's the only way they can be saved from total wipeout. So,
Paul Craig Roberts, we have to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. Can you stick around with us for another 10 minutes or so?
Okay, Tom, I'll give you another 10 minutes. Be glad.
If you can, I would very much appreciate it, because I'd like to ask, you know, what you think are the specific remedies. What can we do about this? What should we do about this? And not just impeachment, but you know, what else can American citizens do? We're talking with Paul Craig Roberts, 27 minutes past the hour. The hour, Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. We're talking with Paul Craig Roberts. He's an economist, nationally syndicated columnist. His columns appear these days at VDare.com, Counterpunch.com, Antiwar.com. The former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration, earning fame as the father of Reaganomics, former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, for Business Week, Scripps Howard News Service, and former contributing editor to the National Review. And Paul Craig Roberts, you were talking about concern that something would happen, another Reichstag fire, another 9/11, that would allow the Republicans in general and the Bush administration in particular to reconsolidate their power and the national consensus around them. And I'm sorry, we commercial breaks. Continue that train of thought, and what we can do about it. Impeachment doesn't seem to be something that's going to happen immediately. What other options do we have, or how should we pursue that?
Well, Tom, short of impeachment, the only thing that could be done is for a majority of the American people to be more aware of what's really going on and how these attacks will be orchestrated, if necessary, in order to save the Republican Party. If enough people were suspicious and alert, it would be harder for the administration to get away with it. I don't think these wake-up calls are likely to be effective. One reason is what is known as the mainstream media is highly concentrated and controlled by about five huge mega corporations that will not cross the government. And so you're not going to get any news out that way other than what the government wants out. So I don't know that we can do anything. I write and try to make people aware that how the world really works. Let me read you. In the break, I quickly penned a speech that we'll likely hear from Bush before the next election and after the next attack. And as I say, it's the administration predicting these attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Here's his speech. My administration knew that there would be more attacks from these terrorists who hate us and our way of life and are determined to destroy every one of us. If only more of you had believed me and supported my war on terror, these new attacks would not have happened. Our security efforts were impaired by the Democrats' determined attempts to surrender to the terrorists by forcing our withdrawal from Iraq and by civil libertarian assaults on our necessary security measures. If only more Americans had trusted their government, this would not have happened. Now, that's what we're headed for.
Yeah.
We're headed for that or the total wipeout of the Republican Party, unless all political wisdom, all past behavior of the electorate toward unpopular administrations and elections somehow evaporates.
Yeah, that kind of language is eerily reminiscent of Mein Kampf.
It always works.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's extraordinary. So
Americans think their danger is terrorists. They don't understand that terrorists cannot take away habeas corpus, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. It cannot suspend the constitutional government, abolish the separation of powers. It can't pick them up or shut them up or pick them up and arrest them. The terrorists are not anything like the threat that we face to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution from our own government in the name of fighting terrorism. Americans just aren't able to perceive that, or at least not enough of them are.
Mm-hmm. So you're suggesting that given that the mainstream media isn't going to get behind this thing, and given that the majority of Americans are not going to be awake to it, and the old trick which has been used so many times going all the way back to Julius Caesar is going to work, that what we have to do is get these guys out of office before they have an opportunity to pull the trigger on this gun that they've already loaded with all these executive orders. In other words, impeach
exactly,
Bush and Cheney.
Exactly. Bruce Fein, who was an assistant attorney general, I think, in the Reagan administration, he's absolutely correct. If you notice, it's the Republicans like Bruce Fein, myself, Pat Buchanan is a diehard Republican. Just the other day, he published a piece saying that we are due for a new Gulf of Tonkin event. That's why we've got three carrier strike forces in the congested waters off Iran.
Yeah,
it's so obvious to people like us who have long been associated in the government, in the corridors of power, watching how it behaves, seeing everybody in the government chafe under every constraint that's imposed on them, and they always want to get rid of these constraints. And there's no belief in the people or anything like that. They have agendas. The people are in the way. The Constitution's in the way. They're all willing to cut it down, to go chase after whatever agenda that they think is important.
When you were in the Reagan administration, you know, they had their difficult time, Iran-Contra in particular, and the allegations that maybe they had cut a deal, that Bush had cut a deal, William Casey had cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages prior to the 1980 election. I mean, there was some pretty nasty rumors flying around, and there were some serious investigations by Congress. Do you think that the Reagan administration or the Republican Party at that time in the 1980s would have ever contemplated the kinds of things that, frankly, have already been done by this administration,
or the kinds
of things that you're anticipating?
No, it's impossible. They never would have done it. It took 9/11 to make these types of things possible. And also, you know, Reagan had a problem with neoconservatives, but it was not a neoconservative administration, and he fired their ass.
Yeah.
And some of them were prosecuted, though they were later pardoned because he was under great pressure. How can you let these anti-communists be punished? Because
you mean like Cap Weinberger?
Current guy on the National Security Council.
Hmm.
And you see, we at the time, though, there was still the Soviet threat. I mean, it was, in some sense, certainly a potential threat.
Hmm.
But Iraq and terrorism, they're nothing like the Soviet Union with massive array of intercontinental ballistic missiles and, you know, enormous political power. And so, no, Reagan, the Reagan administration was not neoconservative. He got pushed into things by them because they had infiltrated the government, Richard Pearl, people like that. But they never succeeded in taking it over and running it and hitching it to their agendas. They had some agendas, and they blew up on them. And like I said, Reagan fired them, and they were a problem. But they themselves concluded from that they had to have a new Pearl Harbor in order to succeed, and they got one with 9/11.
Yeah, that was the language from the Project for New American Centuries 1998 document that was signed by Dick Cheney
and former Secretary of Defense. It would take massive awareness of the population, demonstrations, protests, demands, you know, strikes. I mean, it would take an enormous outpouring that the American people simply aren't able to produce. So I don't think the only constraints on what's going to happen is will come from the federal bureaucracy and perhaps the military. They may have had enough.
The military may push back.
Not go along with it.
And maybe you and I can help stimulate some of that massive public outcry that you were just talking about. Paul Craig Roberts, you're a patriot, sir, and I appreciate your being with us on the program today.
Thank you, Tom, for sharing your audience.
Thank you very much.